This episode of Daily Drive is brought to you by TradeRev, the digital dealer-to-dealer auction platform revolutionizing automotive sales. Give your auction inventory a fast, one-way ticket off your lot with TradeRev, a car global company.
I'm Jason Stein, publisher of Automotive News, and this is Daily Drive. It's Friday, July 31st. 66 months ago, a 43-year-old Elon Musk sat on a stage in Detroit and told a heartfelt story about how he wanted to change the world. He talked about a move toward electrification, a world that would embrace alternative energy, and a vision of how Tesla would grow to become an important player in the automotive conversation. That was January 2015. The venue was our Automotive News World Congress, and the room inside the Marriott Ballroom was so packed the fire marshal was getting concerned. As he spoke to me, sometimes in hushed tones, you could hear a pin drop. The only sound was the continual clicking of camera shutters positioned along the stage's front row. For Musk, it was a chance to explain his dream to a Detroit audience, a rare appearance for the man some have described as the Howard Hughes of our generation. Now, he's worth more than Warren Buffett, has multiple products in the production queue, has launched a rocket to the International Space Station, has sparred with state authorities over direct sales, and has everyone talking about him, not just in automotive circles, but in Hollywood conversations. He's an international sensation, and he's talking to us today in the first of our three parts. Part two will air Monday, part three on Tuesday. We've reached Elon Musk in Brownsville, Texas, at his SpaceX headquarters. Elon Musk, it's good to talk to you again.
It's good to speak with you, Jason.
So I know you're in the center of a hurricane at this moment, or at least a tropical storm. Tell me a little bit about, I know you're not a weatherman, but what is life like down in Brownsville, Texas?
Well, I think this was a relatively light hurricane as they go. I think this was maybe a Cat 1 or something like that. So a lot of water, and a few things got blown over, but overall it was no big deal. Yeah, it was fine. There's no problem. We just had some drinks and kind of watched the wind blow all night. It was an epic scene. It looked great.
You've had a big week. You had your first ever streak of four consecutive quarterly profits. You have announced.
Took us a while. Yeah. I mean, there were certainly a lot of people who said that would never happen. They had some chance of being right. But the Tesla team worked incredibly hard. It's such an honor to work with such great people. And as a consequence of their great efforts, we were able to achieve four consecutive quarters of profit. Not a lot of profit, just to, you know, so people don't think like we're minting money here. But 1%, 1.5%. Well, Q1 was like, I think 0.1%. So it was just like by the skin of our teeth, really. But just thanks very much to the hard work and innovation of the Tesla team.
Some people are now lauding you as being a legitimate player on the global scene, thanks
what?
To.
Finally, yes, I'm legit. It sure has taken a while. I mean, we've had, some conversations over the years, and what was it like 5 years last time we had a conversation,
five and a half.
Wow. Okay. So
things were different then.
Yeah, very different. I mean, so you've obviously seen the whole trajectory of Tesla from basically from nothing, where we started off with just five people, and to where we are now, and we're about 60,000 people. From five people in early 2014 to 60,000 plus people in 2020, and we'll probably be 65 or so by the end of the year, because we're hiring a lot of people.
When they talk about you being one of the industry's strongest brands, and you reflect on the last few years, you must take some sense of satisfaction in the fact that now you're being lauded for the things that we talked about 5.5 years ago.
I wonder, because you've obviously got that I assume that's that recording and, or at least notes.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I sort of wonder, did the things that I say would happen, did they happen? Or, I mean, are we missing, I guess we still need to get full self-driving, of course. You know, I'm just curious, what's my report card or the Tesla report card, for said we would do it and versus did it?
I think it's fair to say that many things that you said that you were going to do, you've done. You're now producing vehicles on a regular basis. And let's just go back the last 2 years where you said you were mired in production hell. And now you're saying just even this past week that you think that the long-term sustainable advantage of Tesla is going to be manufacturing. So what changed?
Yes. Oh, no. The reason I say the long-term sustainable advantage of Tesla will be manufacturing is that I think it's actually the hardest thing to do manufacturing at scale effectively. If you say, it really depends on what time frame. Like if you go a certain number of years into the future, like, I don't know, if you go like 10 years into the future, probably almost all cars will be fully autonomous. Although sometimes I think the industry is going to move faster than it does. But that's just new cars. You know, there's 2 billion cars and trucks on the road in the fleet, and there's 100 million made per year, roughly. So this is something I often have to remind people of is, you know, even if all cars tomorrow were electric and autonomous, it would take 20 years to replace the fleet. So you'll have this strange situation, kind of like when they had horses and automobiles kind of going down Main Street at the same time for, you know, a few decades. Probably several decades. But you'll have that with electric autonomous and fossil fuel non-autonomous vehicles. So essentially, if you assume like, okay, other companies will eventually figure out autonomy, or somebody will provide them with that solution, then they will also have autonomy. We'll have autonomy. That we will just need to be better at manufacturing than them.
And when it comes to manufacturing, you obviously feel that you've learned a lot in this journey, and now you're going to be in a position where you have multiple plants, as you said, over the next 12 to 18 months, running and at high efficiency and just frankly getting better.
Yes.
What was the biggest thing that changed?
Sorry, with respect to improving manufacturing or how I thought about manufacturing,
maybe, I'm not sure. Maybe improving manufacturing.
I tend to take a first principles view of things, like physics first principles view, and say, like, in a limit, how good could manufacturing be if you fully really optimized the velocity and density of the factory such that, you know, every cubic meter was doing something useful, was maximally useful, and the speed at which things moved through the volume of the factory was maximized. You know, that's like, you can think of like a factory like a CPU or like a microchip or something like that. And, you know, you bring the circuits closer together, you increase the clock speed, and then you can calculate some theoretical limits for the output of a given silicon fabrication technology. I think the same is true of factories. So if you actually look at the volumetric efficiency and the velocity of automotive factories, their volumetric efficiency is extremely low. I would say in the low single digit percentage, a couple percent maybe of volumetric efficiency. The speed is much slower than walking speed. A very fast automotive factory would be exiting a car roughly every 25 seconds. If the car length is 5 meters, that's only a speed of 0.2 meters per second. That is one-fifth of walking speed. So the fastest car factories in the world are only producing a car at one-fifth walking speed. This is not very fast. It's quite slow to poor volumetric efficiency combined with low velocity. So you got to figure out how to increase the volumetric efficiency and increase the velocity. And then just like a microchip, you will have vastly greater output. So basically what I'm saying is I think it is possible to improve automotive manufacturing efficiency by at least 1,000% and possibly 10,000%.
That would be an incredible number.
Yeah, small cars are neat.
Why do you think Tesla has captured the public's interest and had market success that maybe some of the legacy OEMs haven't managed to do despite having more established brands?
You know, I think it's just that our approach is we make products that we love. You know, all the way down to like little details, like we, you know, but like these fun video games on the car, and Easter eggs, and obviously we've got autonomy. You know, I think we're leaders in autonomy, at least you know, driver assistance autonomy right now. You know, we're pretty good with like the phone app, and we make the buying experience very easy. You can buy a Tesla in just 2 minutes by going to our website. You can literally order a Tesla in 2 minutes, maybe 1 minute if you're really fast, and you're done. And the car will just be, you know, like delivered to you if you want. And it's just painless and super easy. And then if you don't like the car, you can just give it back. So
that digital first retail model now, that's all dealers are talking about, given COVID-19. Has it kind of proven itself in the post-COVID world, that digital first retail model?
Yeah. I mean, we saw still strong orders through the whole pandemic. You know, we still had a good order volume. Because I guess people are less inclined to want to go to a dealership and do test drives and kind of hang out in the lobby and that kind of thing. Yeah. So
many dealers are changing to that model.
Yeah. It seems to be what people want, or at least a lot of people want.
Do you feel you were a little ahead of the game there?
Sure. That's always, I mean, from the beginning, that was like, you know, fundamental, like this, we're going to, I wouldn't do Tesla if it was not for direct sales.
And you had told me 5.5 years ago that you were even considering adding dealers at some point, but maybe that's something that
if that's like increasingly, like having a traditional dealer situation, I think seems increasingly unnecessary. Yeah, and I think probably the pandemic just reinforced that. We really didn't see big changes to our sales as a function of like where we had stores.
So in that way, there's just validation there in many ways, correct?
It seems like the future is really headed towards online ordering. And then you could always, you know, go take a test drive, but a lot of people, the way they get a test drive is from a friend of theirs who has a car. So they drive in their friend's car. It's like, hey, this car's great. And then they just go and order it online while they're still in their friend's car, literally.
Let's talk about your stock price. You said recently that it was priced too high, and that was just in May when it was around $700. Now you're double that. What do you think's going on?
I'm not sure. It is so, it's difficult to understand the mindset of the stock market. You know, a little over a year ago, we were at what, $180 or something.
Yep.
And then I think we went up to $1,800. I mean, it was like something like a factor of 10 difference. And that's just in a year. what a difference a year makes.
No kidding. Do you think you have to manage investors' expectations or just let the market do its own thing?
I don't think we try to manage investor expectations. It's just like, I think what really matters is, are we making great cars and ensuring that customers are happy? And if so, life would be good. and the, you know, stock market will figure itself out over time. It's not worth trying to massage the stock market or, you know, just manage investor expectations. And it's just, you know, at the end of the day, if you make great cars and you're, the company's healthy and making great products, investors will be happy.
Yeah, indeed.
If you make lousy products, your customers will be unhappy, and then your investors will be unhappy. So just in general, my advice, you know, to corporate America or companies worldwide is spend less time on marketing presentations and more time on your product. Honestly, that should be the number one thing toward in business schools. Put down that spreadsheet and that PowerPoint presentation and go and make your product better.
Simple advice.
Yeah.
When you and I talked in Detroit in 2015, we talked about Detroit embracing EVs. How encouraged are you by that level of embracement by other automakers, and not just Detroit, from BMW to Mercedes to General Motors?
I've been surprised at the slow pace of change. But I'm glad that the change is occurring. So, you know, it's clearly, I think we have reached some sort of inflection point in automotive where, yeah, I think almost every car company, or at least most of the car companies, have made it clear that they're going to make a lot of EVs. And some of them have said that they see the future as being only EV. I think there's still a few that are, you know, on the fence about the hydrogen fuel cell, you know, BS. But, you know, they'll get off that fence. The market will teach them a lesson. So, yeah.
There are hundreds of EV models now headed to the U.S. in the coming years. But with the exception of Tesla, there's actually little sign of any real demand. How do you view that?
Are there a bunch of electric cars that are being made that they can't sell? Or are they just not making a lot of electric cars?
I think there are electric cars that are not selling. And the public's been...
I mean, are they like piling up in the dealer lots and stuff? Or I actually don't know, because I don't really pay much attention to this stuff. So I'm just wondering, you know, I don't know what's going on there. Like I said, you know, I'm not really looking at competitors, or I'm just looking at what are we doing to make our products better and engage in recursive self-improvement. So I actually just don't know what they're, you know, I'm not really looking at what competitors are doing. I honestly just don't know.
Okay.
I'm curious if you know, you know.
Sure. I mean, I think that there's been tepid demand outside of Tesla, would be my analysis.
Okay.
So maybe that points back to not having cars that are as interesting.
Yeah, I think maybe the range is not good enough, or they're too expensive, or they don't have good autonomy. I actually don't really know, because I haven't tried them, you know. So I mean, what do you think they should do?
Make attractive, interesting vehicles.
Okay, sounds good. I do think expectations for range are growing over time. You know, like the goalposts are moving. You know, so where 250 miles, you know, is currently an acceptable standard for range, I think over time that will become, you know, 260 miles, 270, and I think like long term it'll be 200. Like long term, I think 300 miles will be kind of what people expect as normal for an electric car. And for the Model S, we're already over 400 miles.
And you only see that increasing, I'm guessing.
Yes.
What kind of range can we hit at some point?
Well, I mean, technically, we could make a 500-mile range car right now. We'd have to sacrifice, you know, it would add cost and reduce cargo capability. But there's increases in the energy density at the cell level and at the pack level, and improvements in efficiency of the drive unit and the tires and the drag coefficient and the parasitic effect of the HVAC system and other electronics in the vehicle. So, yeah, but you know, I think people kind of probably want about 300 miles over time. That'll be the long-term goal.
Let's talk China. Your Chinese plant is really going strong. You've benefited quite a bit from some support in the Chinese government, while some Chinese startups are really struggling. What's the state of China's EV market, and what role will it play in advancing EV technology?
Well, I mean, to be clear, I don't think we've gotten, you know, sort of more help from the Chinese government than other Chinese car companies. That would be inaccurate. I would say we've gotten less help than other domestic companies in China, as you would expect. But we have received, you know, they have been supportive, but it's not. It would be weird if they were the most supportive to a non-Chinese company.
Sure.
They're not the most supportive to a non-Chinese company. This is not correct.
Right.
And in the U.S., it's also worth pointing out right now in the U.S., we are at a significant disadvantage relative to other electric cars from other makers who still have access to the $7,500 tax credit, where we do not. So Tesla often gets criticized for, like, hey, you just got all these tax credits. And like, yeah, not really. Actually, our competitors have a $7,500 tax credit advantage over us per vehicle right now. And, you know, and they'll say, like, oh, what about that loan that you got in, you know, 2009? I was like, well, first of all, we didn't get the loan in 2009. First disbursement was like March of 2010, after the crisis was over. They didn't bail us out. And we paid that loan off early with interest, while everyone else didn't. So I would say Tesla has, I want to emphasize this, Tesla's had the least government support of any car company, not the most, the least. I'll repeat that, the least.
And how about China as an EV strategy leader in the world?
China rocks, in my opinion. You know, the energy in China is great. People there are, there's like a lot of smart, hardworking people, and they really are, they're not entitled, they're not complacent. Whereas I see in the United States, increasingly a much more complacency and entitlement, especially in places like the Bay Area and LA and New York. So, you know, it's just, here's the thing. It's like, you know, when you've been winning for too long, you sort of take things for granted. In the United States, and especially, you know, like California and New York, been winning for too long. You've been winning for too long, you take things for granted. So just like this, you know, some pro sports team, they win the championship, you know, a bunch of times in a row, they get complacent and they start losing.
We've reached Elon Musk in Brownsville, Texas. That's Daily Drive for Friday, July 31st. For breaking news, go to autonews.com. And for a library of nearly 100 stories, go to autonews.com/dailydrive. We'll be back Monday for part two of my conversation with Elon Musk. And now, a word from our sponsor.
Give inventory an express one-way ticket off your lot with TradeRev, the dealer-to-dealer digital auction platform revolutionizing automotive sales. Selling with TradeRev gives you the speed, ease, and convenience of a live digital auction combined with the power and scale of ADESA's physical and digital marketplaces. Why settle for a single-channel solution when TradeRev and ADESA give you so much more? ADESA and TradeRev's combined buyer base is 150,000 strong, meaning you get more eyes, more bids, and more money on every sale. TradeRev helps you move fast. Launch digital auctions in minutes right from your lot and send non-sales off-site to sell through ADESA's digital and physical channels. TradeRev understands your bottom line. Get every dollar out of your trades with profits that consistently beat the industry average. Enjoy peace of mind. No arbitrations and no hassles with TradeRev's optional seller protection plan. Start selling with TradeRev today and watch your auction inventory ride off into the sunset. Learn more about our pricing plans and introductory sell fees as low as $0 at traderev.com/gone and join the revolution today. That's TradeRev, TradeRev.com/gone.